Trying to make our songs easy next week. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I expect these words are familiar to most of you, and some of you may have actually spoken them. They are, of course, the words of the oath sworn by all who give evidence in a court of law unless they choose to affirm. I noticed when I was looking at the background to this commandment and to that particular oath that it is something that has been sworn in this country for centuries. But last year, somebody, the magistrates, decided to debate whether or not they should continue with that oath. The wording would have been something like, I sincerely determine to tell the truth, whatever that might mean. Fortunately, in some respects, it was thrown out, and we still have, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But then I thought about it again, and I began to wonder how much thought is given to these words by those who say them, and how much notice do they actually take of them in giving their evidence. Indeed, I wonder how much thought any of us gives to ensuring that what we say is the truth. An interesting statistic that I found on the internet was that Americans owned up to telling 11 lies a week. That to me seems a lie in itself. How many of us don't tell more than 11 lies a week? How many of us actually don't tell 11 lies a day? We need to think about that, don't we? Perhaps that is a bit far-fetched, more than 11 lies a day. But certainly 11 lies a week seems a small number to me, doesn't it, to you? I wonder how much we think about telling the truth and telling it all the time. If our attitude towards the seventh and eighth commandment, you shall not commit adultery and you shall not steal, have become far too relaxed in these days, then certainly it is far more so with this ninth commandment that we're looking at this morning. As we saw earlier, this ninth commandment is, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbour. Basically, this means that you must not tell lies about them. But how can we take this seriously? How can we take it seriously when we live in a world where truth has become a casualty, and sometimes a fatal casualty? How can we take it seriously when we live in a society that from top to bottom allows itself and everyone else to say what they're like when lying has become a way of life? We have recently had Plebgate, when a man was lied about, when because of that lie he lost his job. And now, because of that lie, somebody is going to be reprimanded, the man himself. We have programs showing us benefit cheats. From top to bottom, we have liars, MP scandals, lying about expenses. Lies are something we take for granted, something we do almost automatically. And then again, how can we take lying seriously when we hear people being accused, not of lying, but of perpetrating a terminological inexactitude, or being economical with the truth? We can and we must take it seriously, because it is part of God's commandments to us. God was and still is concerned not only that our relationship with him is correct and good, but that our relationships with our neighbours are correct and good as well. That is why he gave us these commandments in the first place. So let's begin to unwrap this commandment. Let's first of all have a look at what I've called the regard. By this I mean the regard we have for this commandment, and also the regard we have for God and for our neighbour. It seems to me from this commandment that God is as concerned that our regard for our neighbour and his name is as great as our regard for him and his name. Now that is fantastic, isn't it? That is amazing. God is as concerned for our neighbour's name as he is almost for his own name. And this is strengthened. It's strengthened by the fact that in Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 15, this statement is made. One witness is not enough to convict a man accused of any crime or offence he may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. And the passage goes on to say that a thorough investigation must be carried out of the witness's statement. And if the witness is found to be lying, if the witness is found to be giving false testimony, then they are to be given the punishment that would have been given to the accused had they been found guilty. Think about that. Think of what effect that would have on society today if that were still in force. That's something of a deterrent, isn't it, for bringing a false accusation. It's a terrible thing to bring a false accusation. And God says, if a false accusation is brought, then if you're found guilty of that false accusation, you suffer the same guilt, the same punishment that the person you claim did it would have suffered if they'd been found guilty. God's concern for our name, God's concern for our neighbour's name, seems to be much higher than ours. As we look at this commandment, we might well be tempted to restrict it to not standing up in a court of law and telling lies about someone. But that would be to restrict it far, far too much. In its broadest sense, it means saying or thinking something that will harm our neighbour. And when we remember that our neighbour is the world, we can see that the commandment might even be brought down to, you shall not lie. For as I mentioned earlier, all lies are designed to harm someone even though we may not think so. Every lie affects somebody else, even though we don't think so. I didn't do it. What does that mean? I know I did it, but I say I didn't do it. Only affects me. But who have you told I didn't do it to? What are they thinking? Can I trust you? If you didn't do it, who did it do it? So it affects them. And then they begin to think, who did it? And so it affects others who might have been in that position where they could have done it. So every lie affects someone else. Matthew Henry, considered a prince among Bible commentators, wrote of this command in his commentary in the early 1700s. The ninth commandment concerns our own and our neighbour's good name. This forbids, one, speaking falsely in any matter, lying, equivocating, using ambiguous words to conceal the truth, and any way devising and designing to deceive our neighbour. There's a lot in there, isn't there? Some of those words, old-fashioned words, long words, but we know what they mean basically, don't we? Two, it forbids speaking unjustly against our neighbour to the prejudice of his reputation. And thirdly, it forbids bearing false witness against him, laying to his charge things that he knows not, slandering, backbiting, tale-bearing, aggravating what is done amiss, and making it worse than it is, and any way endeavouring to raise our own reputation upon the ruin of our neighbours. Again, some old-fashioned words, old-fashioned statements there, but you know what it means, don't you? It means don't lie about anyone. In fact, don't lie at all. This command forbids lying in any form or another. That's the regard. Let me move on to my second point, which is this, the reason. What is the reason for us breaking this command? What is it that causes us to break it, to give false witness, to lie? Well, there are a number of things. Stuart Briscoe, in his book on the Ten Commandments, suggests four reasons why we lie, four categories of lie, to which I want to add a fifth. There are, I'm sure, very many more, but here are the five. First of all, the destructive lie. This is the lie that is likely to stem from envy, from jealousy, from anger, or from hatred. It is the lie that is told in order to destroy or hurt the person in some way or another. And we can see this type of lie in the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. You'll know the story. Joseph was there in Potiphar's house. He had charge of everything that Potiphar owned. And one day, many days actually, if we look at the story, he was alone with Potiphar's wife. And Potiphar's wife wanted to go to bed with him. And when Joshua resisted her advances, she told a deliberate lie about him. Okay, if you're not going to go into bed with me, I'm going to punish you. And she caused him to be put in jail. In fact, he might well have died, been killed. That was the result of her lying. That was a destructive lie. And we can do that, can't we? Somebody perhaps that we know is better at something than we are. And so we tell a lie about them to try and destroy them. We can see it too in the religious leaders of Jesus' day. Their jealousy led them to have lies told about Jesus that resulted in his crucifixion. It is true, isn't it, that when we become envious, jealous, angry, or when we hate somebody, that it becomes a somewhat easy thing to do, to spread lies about them. That's the destructive lie. Second, there's the defensive lie. A collection of schoolboy howlers is said to include the following response to a question that invited the children to write down any Bible quotation on the subject of lying. And one boy wrote this: "A lie is an abomination to the Lord." But he didn't stop there. That would have been good. But he then went on to say something else. He said, "A lie is an abomination to the Lord," and wait for it, "and a very present help in trouble." First part, of course, is scriptural. The second part is actually scriptural, although it clearly isn't in the right place, but it aptly describes what we're talking about here. A lie is an abomination to the Lord and a very present help in trouble. The person in trouble will often try to lie their way out of it. And a biblical example of this is Peter, isn't it? Peter, when he denied his Lord. He was afraid of the consequences of telling the truth, and he told lies instead. He told them he was not a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. Are there times in our lives when we're afraid for one reason or another to tell the truth, so we resort to a lie? Then there is thirdly the defrauding lie. This is the sort of lie told in order to gain some advantage. It is the lie of the con man. It's the lie of some ordinary person seeking to get something from someone else through that lie. See it often in London churches. Saw it often in Covent Garden. I've even seen it here two or three times. People come in wanting money, and the lies they tell in order to get that money. It's the lie, of course, of Gehazi. You remember Gehazi? He was Elisha's servant. And when Elisha wouldn't accept anything from Naaman for curing his leprosy, Gehazi ran after Naaman and by lies defrauded him of silver and clothing. When our heart covets something, be it money, possessions, position, or power, we will often go to any lengths to get it. The defrauding lie, are we guilty of it? Then fourthly, there's the deceptive lie. This is a lie told with the truth, or at least part of the truth. Stuart Briscoe tells of a time in his teens when he had a girlfriend. I think the youngsters should close their ears to this one. It was a time when his parents wouldn't permit him to have a girlfriend. And when they asked him where he was going, he would say, "I'm going down to the boys' club." And what he would do was this. Some of you, I know, you're ahead of me here. You know exactly what he's going to do. He would then go down to the club. He would walk in the front door. He would say hello. He would walk out the back door, go out with his girlfriend, come back to the club, walk in the back door, speak to one or two people, walk out the front door, and go home. And when he got home and he was asked where he'd been, he could truthfully say, "The boys' club." But of course, it wasn't the whole truth, was it? It was, in fact, a deceptive lie. Do you know how to use the truth to tell a lie? Finally, there is the defective lie. This comes in various forms. Let me mention just three. It comes through carelessness. I listen to information I catch a bit of information that's being spoken about by two people who are standing by me. And I fail to check it out before passing it on. And I could be, without realizing it, passing on lies. I need to be careful how I pass on things, particularly about people, and particularly if I'm not very keen on that person. It's easy to start a rumor, isn't it? The defective lie comes through boastfulness. We want to show off. We want to attract attention. We want to boost our ego. And in the process, make statements about ourselves that are just not true. We need to watch this, don't we? And then thirdly, it comes through silence. How can I lie? By being silent. Well, you can do so by knowing the truth about something, but not standing up and telling that truth, despite the fact that someone will suffer because of your failure to speak. That, in a sense, is a lie. These are just some of the many reasons for lying. But what is so wrong about lying? Well, let's look very quickly at two more points, the first of which is the result. The first result of lying is that it offends God. Do you think about that? It offends God. Why should it do that? Well, it does so because God is truth. He can neither lie nor have anything to do with lies. Lies are of the devil. Solomon says in Proverbs 6 and verse 16 that there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. And two of those seven things are a lying tongue and a false witness who pours out lies. Jesus in John chapter 8 and verse 44 says quite clearly, you belong to your father the devil and you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth. For there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So when we are lying, we are about the devil's business, not God's. And Solomon again, this time in Proverbs 12 and verse 22 says, the Lord detests, he detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. So the first result of lying is offending God. The second result is it offends our neighbour. It firstly offends the neighbour who has been lied about. Now this will come as no surprise, will it? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Aren't you offended when people tell lies about you? Don't you, in those circumstances, feel betrayed and insulted? So it offends the neighbour, as it would offend you. And it also offends the neighbours who know about the lie. I spoke last week of the suspicion that surrounds the one who steals. And a similar situation surrounds the one who lies. The neighbours are wary. The neighbours are wondering when it is their turn to suffer at the liar's hands. And the third result not only offends God, not only offends the neighbour, but in a sense, it offends the liar. It affects the liar as well. Now, this may sound double dutch, but it's true. Because what our lies do is shatter our character. As with most things, the first time we do it, it's perhaps the most difficult. The first lie may not come easily to us. But once we've done it, the second becomes a little easier. And the third a little easier still. And so it goes on. And with lie after lie, we become insensitive to the truth. Our integrity is destroyed. And we become liars. Friends look at us and are likely to be our friends no more. No one will trust us. And something within us dies. That's something of the result of sin, the result of lying. Let me move quickly on to the remedy. The first thing we need to realise is what is involved here. And what is involved big time is that thing in your mouth, that thing in my mouth, the tongue. The tongue is so aptly described by James in his third chapter. It is a little thing, but with what power? Thomas Watson, speaking of this ninth commandment, says this: "The tongue, which at first was made to be an organ of God's praise, is now become an instrument of unrighteousness. This commandment binds the tongue to its good behaviour." God has set two natural fences to keep in the tongue: the teeth and the lips. And this commandment is a third fence set about it, that it should not break forth into evil. First defense, the teeth. Second defense, the lips. Third defense, this commandment. So what a lot of broken fences there are. We need to be aware. We need to be aware that the tongue is involved and that the tongue is such a dangerous thing. Then we need to be aware of what Paul tells the Ephesians in his letter to them. He says in chapter 4 and verses 22 to 25, "You were taught, with regard to your former way of life, to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbour, for we are all members of one body." To be like God, who is the truth, we must speak the truth. For to lie is to be unlike God and to be like the devil. We are to put off falsehood and speak truthfully. The regard. How do we regard this command? And are we guilty of breaking it? The reason. Do we see the reasons for breaking the command in our life? The result. Do we know the result of breaking this command? I want to give an illustration here. This illustration is thanks to somebody that at least three people in the congregation will know, Joe Mifsud. Joe is the pastor of the Bible Baptist Church in Malta, a church that we go to when we're in Malta. And when I was looking for illustrations for "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbour," I came up with this block, which said this was a sermon by Joe Mifsud. And so I had a quick listen. And in the course of his sermon, he gives this illustration. He says there were two friends, and one friend told a lie about the other. And somehow or other they remained friends, but of course this lie spread. And when he was dying, the one who had been sinned against was lying on his deathbed, and the friend came in and asked for forgiveness for telling this lie. And so he said, "Yes, I forgive you." And then he said this. He said, "Can you take that pillow?" He said, "I want you to rip open the pillow. I want you to go over to the window, and I want you to throw all the feathers in the pillow out of the window." The friend thought this was rather strange, but he did so. And having done so, he went back to his friend's bedside, and his friend said to him, "Now what I want you to do is to go outside and pick up all those feathers." And the friend said, "It's impossible. They've been blown here, there, and everywhere." And that is a result of a lie, isn't it? Lies soon spread. And lies, once they're out, are out. And there's very little we can do to bring them back. So the regard, the reason, the result, the remedy. Are we seeking the remedy so that we will not break this commandment? You shall not bear false witness against your neighbour. Our closing hymn is "Make Me a Channel of Your Peace. Where there is hatred, let me bring your love. Where there is injury, your pardon, Lord."